and our series with media insiders on how media, particularly top-tier media, has changed continues with our next media insider. So let me tell you a little bit about her. Tara Rummel-Burson is a writer, editor, and blogger. She's been on staff at Red Book Magazine and has contributed to numerous national media outlets. Tara also freelanced regularly for A&E Television Networks and iVillage.com and is currently a senior editor and on-air personality for health and wellness website NoMore.tv. In 2011, she launched The Crankiness Crusher. That's TCC. It's a WordPress blog and Facebook community. TCC is an online platform that encourages people to focus on the big and small things that bring them happiness on a daily basis and was recently featured in the book Inspiring Hope, One Story at a Time. In addition to her editorial background, Tara has extensive PR experience and is an adjunct communications professor. She lives at the Jersey Shore with her husband, two young children, and her dog. So, Tara, welcome.
Hi, how are you?
I'm doing great. I'm so glad that you have some time to talk with us today because I think this is such an important issue. And we'll be talking to a number of people listening on this call who are entrepreneurs, some have small businesses, consultants, speakers, mm-hmm. thought leaders, all different kinds of people. And from your perspective, what I want to talk to you about, at least to launch this interview, is how has media changed over the past several years from your perspective? I know it's a big question.
But it is a big question. I mean, I guess the biggest thing I've seen is that it's gone from more print-inspired to going digital. And, you know, I'm sure you've all heard that newspapers are dying, you know, magazines are going away. And, you know, that's not necessarily true. We've all had to find a way to just go with the times. And, you know, going with digital apps on your smartphones and, you know, becoming more social media savvy.
Right. So it's as though we've got all these legacy
yes.
media outlets, and they are really reinventing themselves because that's,
right, you have to.
Yes, you do. And many are doing it, and that's really one of the big messages I want to get across here, that things are changing. Time to jump aboard.
Mm-hmm.
So what has surprised you in all of this, and what do others need to understand about these changes?
I mean, I don't think I'm necessarily surprised because, you know, over the years, I've grown up with media. And, I mean, I guess I was a little bit disappointed, especially having worked in the magazine industry, about seeing these changes because I'm such a big fan of carrying around a book, you know, like actually feeling that book in my hands and flipping through a magazine page. But, you know, the thing is that I've also learned that it's okay to read a book on a Kindle or a Nook. You know what I mean? It's just, mm-hmm. it's the same thing. It's just a different way.
And, you know, when you and I first met, you were with Red Book Magazine.
Yes.
And I think I was talking to you about, I think the first time was David Simon from the Joker Center. Yeah, you remember that. Oh, that's great.
Yeah, I do. I loved that interview.
Yeah, oh, it was really great. And so a number of years have passed and a number of changes have taken place. So now let's talk a little bit about what you're doing now and then mm-hmm. how people can reach out to you and others who are doing this.
Sure.
So what are you doing currently? Let's talk a little bit about that.
Well, what I'm doing currently is I am an editor at a health and wellness website called NoMore.tv, and I cover nutrition, fitness, and women's health topics. I've also recently just become the love editor at a website called GalTime.com.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm doing that currently, and you
Wait
know
a minute.
When I
you're
can,
the love editor, you're the love
yes.
editor. Oh, I love
yes.
that.
Yes, this is just a new. Thank you. This is my newest job, and NoMore.tv and GalTime are now affiliated. So I'm fortunate enough to get to work for both sites, and so that's what I'm doing now. And so I work with many writers, and you know I have lots of people pitching me story ideas, and I just see what people are offering, and I try to figure out some pithy story titles around it and then get them produced on the sites.
Well, this leads perfectly into my next question, which
I try.
I love that. How do people get your attention? It's a noisy, noisy, noisy world, and more
is.
People have access, right? More and more people can reach out.
Yes.
So how do people get your attention versus all those that don't?
I guess, you know, what I notice is that you always want to explain how your business, your product, your book, your mission, or whatever you're trying to publicize is different than what everyone else is offering. You know, what's, I'm sure you've all heard this before, what's the unique value proposition? You know, does it tie into any larger pop culture and societal trends that are happening? Or, you know, even talk about trends that are happening within your industry. Make me see why you're different and why I should write about you.
Okay. And so it could be a cultural thing. It could be tying into the news. It could be tying into something that's on people's minds.
Well, I mean, just to give you an example is obviously it's Valentine's Day this week. And being a love editor, I obviously would want to write about a lot of things now because this is the week of love, so to speak. So if you happen to have something that ties into it, then now is the time to pitch me, especially since I work at a website and I can get things up quickly. You know, it would be different when I worked at a print publication because they work 3 months out.
Yeah.
So if you wanted something to run in February, you would have to pitch it earlier.
Yes, I think this is really an important point.
Mm-hmm.
With those long lead magazines, sometimes it could be up to 6 months, depending.
It can be, yes.
And so with the online sites, you're saying, I mean, the timeline is much, much shorter.
It is, and it's more flexible, at least in my case. You know, I can move stories around and I can run something, you know, one day and bump another one to a different day.
Right.
And which is a change, a healthy change. I like it being flexible like that.
Yeah, and so how important is that subject line then? Because what you pointed out, it would be if you took the time to read it.
Yes.
But maybe you might know from the subject line if you were even going to open it.
Absolutely, the subject line is key. I mean, you want to write something that, like, grabs your attention. You know, make it pithy and entice me to open it, and open it now versus 2 weeks later, which is why tying your pitch into something current really helps.
So now you're writing for some large platforms that, you know, they're large media platforms.
Yes.
And how is that different versus, say, bloggers who just kind of start their own thing? And how do people know?
Well, what do you mean, how do they know?
How do they know that your sites that you're working for are big versus...
Are bigger than a blogger's, so to speak?
Yeah.
Well, I guess it's, you know, if you see it out there, you know, how much content you're producing.
Mm.
I mean, I think you can really tell by going to someone's site how well-known they are, whether they have credentials. You know, someone who seems to be experienced versus someone who is not. You know, it's an interesting world right now because a lot of bloggers aren't trained journalists, so to speak.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that you can tell based on what people are writing about, you know, what's what.
I did another interview with a columnist, and she pointed out that when she gets pitches, the biggest challenge for her now is she has to go back and make sure that the person is an expert. I mean, anybody can call themselves an expert now.
It's true.
You're running into that?
Yeah, well, what I do is as soon as someone pitches me, and if I'm interested in him or her, I Google them. I'm all about Googling people. And I like to see if they've been quoted before and where they've been quoted and whether or not they really are an expert. You know, whether they've written a book is helpful.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you definitely, as a journalist, I have to do my due diligence to see if this person is an expert in this particular field.
So how important is it that they do have credentials versus they have a huge following and a huge network, or are they both important?
Well, I mean, I think about it this way. If you were hiring someone, would you hire them without credentials? I mean, that's why we have resumes, right?
Right.
So the first thing I do, like I said, is you know, I quickly research who they are. You know, do they have this website? Have they been quoted in other media outlets? Do people know about them? You know, and that's why it's so important to have a big social network footprint. You know, having one helps, and it shows journalists who you are and how many people are interested in what you have to say. You know, in the past, when I've pitched book manuscripts, I write books in my spare time, or I try to.
Wow.
One of the first things literary agents and publishers want to know is how many Twitter and Facebook followers you have.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because they want to know that you're marketable. Because when you're marketable, it translates into revenue. And the media are the same way. We want to know that you're a credible source of information and that what you have to say is marketable, meaning it'll make someone want to buy a magazine or click on an article because consumers are genuinely interested and care about what you have to say.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So in all of this, Tara, what are some of your pet peeves? What are people doing that they should not be doing?
Well, I mean, I'm a pretty easygoing person, but I don't really like when pitches are extremely generic. I want you to help me see how we can turn whatever you're talking about into a story, provide some statistics and research that support what you're trying to sell. Because let's face it, you know, you're really trying to sell your ideas to journalists. I'm also not fond of being bombarded with emails. It's okay to follow up on your pitch once or twice, but if you don't hear back from me or another journalist, it pretty much means that he or she isn't interested in what you have to offer at that time. So that's why, again, it's extremely important to have some sort of news hook, you know, make it seem relevant. So if you just written a book about love, you know, like I was talking about before, send out a press release or a pitch that ties into Valentine's Day. It'll definitely up your chances of getting a story published in the media faster.
Okay. Well, that makes sense. So that's not too many pet peeves, only a couple.
No, no.
And those are ones that people really should take to heart. And you know what? That's always been the case. We talk about all the changes that have gone on, but there are certain things that have not changed, right? A good
right.
story idea.
Yes, yeah. A good story is a good story, no matter where it appears.
And also having a hook for it, because someone can have a great story but not get to the meat of it fast enough.
Yes.
Because how bombarded are you on a daily basis? How many pitches would you say you get?
Oh, boy. I get a lot. I mean, if you looked at my email inbox, you would probably feel exhausted just by looking at it. I mean, I probably say I get at least 100 a day.
Wow, that's a lot.
You know, it's a lot.
Yeah.
So, you know, I have different inboxes that I put things into, but I, you know, as they come in, if it's something that I'm interested in, I will respond right away. Otherwise, it tends to get buried.
Right.
But it is. It's overwhelming.
Yeah. So all the more reason to have that subject line
yes.
in a way that is going to make sense. So what do you think about people connecting with you on social media?
I you know, I'm for it. It depends. You know, if someone, you know, happens to type my name into Facebook, for example, and they end up pitching me via the messaging system there, I'm okay with it. You know, I really, some people might not be. If you find me on Twitter, which is @CrankyCrusher, by the way, you know, it's a good way to see the stuff that I write about. And, I mean, it's the way of the future. I mean, I think that's how we are all tending to connect nowadays, so why not in a business sense as well? One of my favorite ways via social media to connect with businesses is LinkedIn.
Mm.
I don't, you know, I think that that's also a great way to connect with people you're trying to reach out to, and maybe even a more professional way to do so.
Uh-huh. Okay. So what are the platforms that you like to play on the most? Twitter, obviously, LinkedIn.
Yeah, like I would say LinkedIn, Twitter. I mean, I like Pinterest, but that's more so from a personal aspect. You know, Facebook. You know, probably the same ones that you all use as well.
Mm-hmm. Well, and just for a moment, let's talk about your blog, The Crankiness Crusher.
Yes.
How'd you come up with that title?
Well, shortly after you met me, I was working at Redbook Magazine, and then I left, and I had children. And I was finding that I was having a bit of an identity crisis, and I was, you know, freelancing, but I just wasn't really feeling as happy as I normally do or as I normally had in the past. And I just said, you know, my son and I, he was little at that point, probably about 4 years old. We were driving, and he just was noticing some things along our drive that were beautiful to him, whether it was the sunset or just simple things that made him happy.
Mm.
And I ended up sharing that story with my husband over coffee the next morning, and he said, well, it doesn't take much to make you happy. And I thought, you know what, you're right. And I just decided to start blogging about at least one thing a day that made me smile. Even if I was having the worst day in the world, there is always that one thing, that crankiness crusher, that makes you smile. Mm-hmm. And that's how I came up with it. And, you know, I have a Facebook page, and, you know, I have about 2,000 followers, so apparently it resonates with some people, right?
Absolutely.
And that's how it started.
Absolutely. That's a wonderful story, and it's so true. And sometimes it's our kids that really point out things that
We get lost in the shuffle of life, and we forget to look to really prioritize and see what's really important.
Yeah, it's nice to have their wondrous eyes kind of looking out, and yeah, it's a great idea. So you've got the crankiness crusher. You write for a couple of other outlets. So what are the best stories? You've touched on this a little bit, but are there any stories that in particular that you love and respond to?
Well, I think that for all of us, I mean, think about the things that you want to read. The best stories are stories that are relatable. And I think it's also helpful if they tie into something that's happening right now, you know, whether it's a holiday, something that's trending in the news, or if it ties into a specific study that was just released. You know, they're generally the best stories. Just like I love human interest stories because they're, you know, I like things that are touching. I like uplifting stories. You know, I think that's just me being, you know, a health and wellness type writer. You want some feel-good things out there in the news as well.
Mm-hmm. Something I'm kind of hearing underneath this, too, is the importance of people when they're pitching you to make it not all about them, but about you and what you need.
Well, sure. I mean, you always want to make sure that you're targeting the correct journalist. You know, you want to find out what his or her beat is. You know, like I had talked about before, I cover nutrition, fitness, love, women's health. So, you know, you want to make sure that the topic that you're pitching is of interest to that person. Mm-hmm. You know what topics the journalists are looking for, and it'll increase your chances of forming a good relationship with that person. Whether or not that pitch works the first time, you know, they'll remember you, and you'll get to work together in the future, I'm sure.
So it used to be back in the day that people had to buy these humongous media databases. Are you saying that it's possible to find you without doing that?
Yes. I mean, I guess if you know someone's name, you know, if you Googled me, like I Google everyone, you could just put Tara Rummelberson, and then you would see a lot of the things that I write about. The crankiness crusher would pop up. The interesting thing is with being an editor at NoMore.tv and Gal Time, my name doesn't appear because I'm behind the scenes. I have writers who write for me.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, you may have to find that out via some sort of media database. But, you know, if you reach out to me and you say, oh, you know, what you're talking about seems interesting, I'd be happy to share, you know, things that I'm looking to cover.
And then once someone lands an interview with you, let's say they send you a pitch, they've got the good subject line, it's a story, it's something you're interested in, it's got a unique angle, then how do you like to work with people?
Well, I think the biggest thing is you want to try to be as accommodating as you can. You want to make sure that scheduling the interview is easy. You want to ensure that when you do talk to me or another journalist that you have your talking points squared away.
Mm-hmm.
When someone is interviewing you, you want to make sure that you actually talk about what you're supposed to and that you always have things to back up whatever you're saying so that you appear credible.
And by that, do you mean statistics? Do you mean examples of stories? Both?
Both. Yeah. Exactly. Another thing is you want to, and I don't know if everyone thinks about this, but you want to keep your sound bites short. You want to think about presenting what you have to offer in quotable form. Because when it comes down to it, I need to round out my story with quotes that will enrich and enhance the points I'm making.
Mm-hmm.
So then the more quotable you are, the better chance you have of getting on TV and being interviewed in the future. You want to really listen, not hear, but listen to what the journalist is asking you and then respond in a concise way, because a long-winded spokesperson can be very trying for a journalist.
Yeah, this is a real point toward media training, which I always encourage people
Absolutely.
To get.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And if you've done media before, if you have a new topic, a new book, a new whatever, it's good to get training and make sure you've got those sound bites down. I heard a great sound bite about 6 months ago, which is quite a while ago, but it really stuck with me, and I'd just like to share it really quickly and see what you think.
Mm-hmm.
She was this woman was talking about serial relationship people. They go from relationship to relationship to relationship.
Yes.
And the reason they do that is because they have this long laundry list of things that the person has to meet, and it's impossible for anyone, you know, to meet
exactly
all that's on this list. And she says, so the thing about relationships being perfect, she said, perfection equals pure fiction.
Mm.
I loved that.
I like that. And
yeah.
That's something I never heard before.
And it's quotable.
Yes, it is quotable.
To your point.
In fact, that could be on a T-shirt.
It could be, you know, good idea. Yeah, and you know, and coming up with sound bites and really getting those key points down, really media training is so important, because that's really challenging to do.
Yes.
And I know you've done interviews. You've been on that end of things. So do you have any advice for people how they go about doing that?
How they go about being concise?
Yes, and creating sound bites.
Well, I think that you just want to sort of visualize your key points and think about how it would appear either, you know, in an online publication, in a magazine, or even how you would hear it on TV. When you listen, you also could look at people on TV, spokespersons, and see what they're doing,
mm-hmm.
you know, and just, you know, even when I'm talking now, we want to make sure that you're not being so long-winded because you want there to be a takeaway. And if you can, I highly suggest that you get some form of media training. It's really helpful. And, you know, that person will sit down with you and almost do practice interviews. And the more comfortable you get with being interviewed, the easier it will be in the future. And, you know, the more chances you'll have of other people wanting to interview you.
It's interesting because sometimes when I've worked with new people brand new to media mm-hmm. or brand new to this process, although, well, when I do, sometimes the hardest thing for them is they don't understand sitting on the hot seat.
Yes.
Until you're there.
It's hard.
It is hard.
I'm in the hot seat right now.
Yes, you are. But I hope you're having fun.
I am.
But it's true. It's kind of like sitting in front of your video camera the first few times. It's very,
yes.
you know, there's some pressure.
Intimidating.
There.
Mm-hmm.
It is. So what we used to do with some media training is we would get people in up on stage and then have them interviewed by, you know, the worst possible interviewer. I mean,
yes.
the one that would make it the most difficult ever
right.
regarding your topic.
It's a great idea.
It is because, you know, at the end of it, we'd just say, you'll never have an interview as tough as that one.
Right. And if you could survive that, you can survive any of them.
Exactly. Thank you for the sound bite. That was very good.
No problem.
All right. Well, what are some of the best interviews that you've had and why? Do you want to share a couple stories?
Well, I mean, I would say that it's not always about the person I'm interviewing, but the best interviewees are the ones who are passionate about what they're talking about. And I think someone who understands and appreciates the value of media. You know, I love when people are able to keep the interview focused, but let their guard down enough to show who they really are as a person. Because, you know, as we were just talking about, the more relaxed you become with being interviewed, the better the conversation will be. And I truly appreciate when someone is respectful of my time as I am of theirs, and they really listen to the questions I'm asking, and they don't, you know, veer off track when responding. And it's really great when the person wants to make the article that you're putting together the best possible one that it can be by offering, you know, additional information, quotes, and just by making themselves available for any follow-up questions. Those are the best kinds of interviews. I've had tons of great interviews. In fact, I can't think of anyone specifically because I've been fortunate enough to always get pretty lucky. Or maybe it's just, you know, I have the gift of gab and I can bring it out in people. But most times I've been very fortunate with people sharing quotable information and having fun while doing it.
That's great. That's very helpful, all those tips of what makes a good interview. Let me ask you this. Have you ever mm-hmm. been on the receiving end, you were the interviewee, and you had someone ask you a really off-the-wall question? And were you able to bring it back, bridge it back to what you were there to talk about? I mean, how do you handle that?
Well, I mean, I guess I noticed this more in my classroom than I do in being interviewed because I'm a professor. And oftentimes my students get way off track. And I think it's a good practice in life just to find ways to quickly respond to whatever that person is asking, but then bring it back to the point, you know, without being rude in any way. And I can't think of any off-the-wall questions, but, I mean, you can imagine with 20-year-olds some of the things I get asked, you know. But, you know, in an interview situation, there is always a way to bring it back. And don't be afraid to do so.
And that's, again, another argument for having those key messages and really knowing what they are.
Yes.
And
yes.
for media training. Because as a publicist, I have run into media people who were not as adept as what you're discussing. And they have
mm-hmm.
asked questions that were totally unrelated to why my client was there. And
it's horrible.
Some of them
it's awkward.
It
can be very awkward. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it is. Some of them couldn't bring it back. Some of them could. So watching someone do that well is really a pleasure. And it's very different from politicians who, you know, they're asked a question, and if they don't want to answer that question, they just answer a totally different question. So you're saying you want to address
That's obvious, too, when they do that, and that's annoying.
Very. I mean, I find myself screaming at the, you know, screen, hey, get back to the point. You know?
Yes, yes.
I know I'm not alone in that.
Well, they may think you don't notice, but we do.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. So, Tara, what's next for you?
Oh, my. Well, I really am fortunate that I enjoy what I do for a living. I will always be a writer. I hope to always be part of the media. I look forward to the changes that we'll see in the media. And, you know, I feel like I've been blessed to have seen the changes in our society, to have been raised in an era where I saw 8-tracks and I saw cassettes, you know, and DVDs and CDs and how things can continuously change. And I think I have more of a positive take on it. I you know, it's a great time to be involved in the media. And who knows what it'll be like in 5 years, or what I'll be doing in 5 years. But I hope to be, you know, doing what I love, hopefully growing my brand with the Crankiness Crusher, and perhaps writing some books. And I don't know. We will see. Stay tuned.
That's a very refreshing attitude, and it's one that I share, because I think it is a very exciting time. And if we can embrace that, we will go a long ways with whatever our message is to the world or our business or whatever we're doing. So,
agree wholeheartedly.
Tara Rummel-Burson, thank you so much for joining us today, Tara. I really appreciate it.
My pleasure.
It.